I'm Tom Cooney, and this is Business Wise. Today, our guest is Candace McGraw. Candace is the Chief Executive Officer of the Kenton County Airport Board, the Greater Cincinnati Airport that we all know. And Candace, I just recently passed through the airport a couple of times on my way to and from vacation, and I noticed there's some changes since the last time I'd been there. You've opened your new terminal, or a remodeled terminal.
On May 15th, we consolidated our terminals. We moved those carriers that were in Terminal 2, which are all the carriers but for Delta, and we reopened Concourse A. So it was a great chance for us to expand our gate offerings. We went from 8 gates in Terminal 2 to 16 gates in Concourse A, and it gave us a chance to consolidate into the terminal, bring some life into it, refresh it. The goals of the project were threefold. One was so that we could grow our existing carriers. Those carriers that were in Terminal 2 were out of space. We knew they wanted to add flights. They just didn't have the facilities to do that. Two, we want to be able to accommodate new carriers coming to the region, so we talked to carriers all the time about coming in and using CVG. And three, we wanted to really establish a sense of place, give the airport a facelift, so to speak, bring in the assets of the region. We teamed with the Inquirer to show great images of the region throughout the tunnel. If you had a chance to use Concourse A, it's lighter, brighter. We worked closely with the people that were doing the story project for the chambers. We wanted to bring in that sense of the River City mosaic and how you did that from a design aesthetic, etc. We know that the airport is a community asset. It is our chance to showcase the region. This is the first impression people have when they come to our area, and we want to let them know the beauty and the attributes and things going on. And this is a chance, this is their last impression of the region as well.
You know, you've been here in Cincinnati a little more than 2 years. Why did you take the job, and what do you think of it so far?
Oh, I absolutely love my job. I think it is the best job that anyone could have. I wake up enthused every day to come to work. Why now? I think it's a great time to be in our industry, and it's a great time to be at CVG. It certainly isn't boring. I tell my staff we have no shortages of good projects to work on every day.
You know, one of the things that you added, we were in Concourse A when we went on our trip, and one of the things I was delighted to find, Crystal was looking at the pictures, I, of course, was on
shopping.
My computer using your free Wi-Fi network, which not that many airports have these days.
Yeah, great. Thank you for looking at that. So we really want to place a great emphasis on customer service as part of this project. So we offer free Wi-Fi. We now have our Wi-Fi connected all through the tunnel, so you no more lost cell phone or cell phone coverage in tunnel. Each of the hold rooms have a business desk that you could sit at. It accommodates 8 passengers, so you can plug in and use your laptop while you're sitting there. I don't know if you noticed in the seats, the way we arranged them, every one of the seats is either an end seat or feels like an end seat, and then each pair of seats have a plug-in. We were very mindful of those details. One of the other details that we placed a lot of emphasis on was the restrooms, because we know, you know, that's how people judge a facility. So we wanted to make them sort of state-of-art with the amenities that are offered there as well. Over the course of this summer through up until the holidays, we're going to be starting a renovation of the food court in Concourse B as well. So you'll see some new offerings come in. That'll all get a facelift as well.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Candace McGraw. Candace is the Chief Executive Officer of the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport. And Candace, back in the heyday, back in 2005, CVG had about 600 daily flights. Today, we're right at 180. It sounds like a big drop.
When we were at the apex back in 2005, about 85 to 95% of the passengers coming through the airport were transient. They were what we call flow passengers. The number of passengers now that originate or end their destination at our airport has remained fairly constant over time. So while there's a decrease in the number of flights, the number of originating passengers has remained constant. So with the merger of Delta and Northwest, at one time we were a fortress hub for Delta, and that's no longer the case. We're considered a hub, but not one of their fortress hubs a la Atlanta or Detroit. But we still have a very good level of air service compared to airports in our region or airports our size. As I said, we have about 52 daily nonstops. We serve 37 out of the 40 top business destinations. So business traveler or someone in the region can still get to where they need to be in a daily trip.
In light of this change in the flights, what's that going to make CVG look like? I know you've already made some changes with the terminals. What's it going to look like over the next 5 years differently than it does now?
I would say over the course of the next few years into, say, the next 20 years as we're going looking at our master plan, we'll become a much more multi-carrier airport. Right now, Delta is still the dominant passenger carrier at the airport, and we'd like to keep them that way. We like to foster that relationship, but we also realize we need to grow our relationships and the number of flights with other carriers. For instance, United recently announced they are adding 17 new flights a week out of CVG. Or US Air added 3 new daily flights to Washington, D.C. not too long ago. I think over the next few years, we'll evolve into a more multi-carrier environment.
So what causes an airline to make that decision to add those flights?
We do detailed business cases for each of our markets, and we work with each of the carriers, either those that are currently here or those that we're out there trying to attract. And we stay in very close contact with the business community and leisure passengers as well on where they need to be at. So we look at where can a carrier make money? Where are we flying that we don't have the right aircraft gauge? Where can we adjust time of day? Where are markets that we know that we need to serve that we currently aren't serving?
Are you seeing an uptick because the economy is getting better? Are you seeing more travelers?
You know, it was interesting. We worked with the Air Service Task Force put together by the chambers last year, and we did a survey amongst all the top business users in town, and each of those companies responded that they were looking at increasing their travel budget over the next year or two, which we view as a very good sign. And actually, that's news very well received by the carriers.
That's a good sign for you, but it's also probably a good sign for the economy.
I think so. It's a very positive sign for the economy.
What else came out of that study that you think people might find interesting?
The final result of the study was that there is no silver bullet, that the air service issues that we're experiencing in CVG are a result of industry consolidation, a result of fuel prices, etc. And that's not unlike many of the communities in this country, that we do have a very good level of air service, that we're at or exceed all of the airports in our region in terms of our cost structure, etc. So I think in terms of facilities, we're great. We have about 7,000 acres at CVG, and we're looking at ways to diversify our revenue in terms of looking at land development over the course of time.
If people would like more information, where can they go?
CVGairport.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Crystal, today I want to talk about vacations. And you know, sometimes when you have an employee, you think the employee may be extremely loyal because they're so dedicated, they never want to go on vacation. But that could be a bad sign, couldn't it?
Tom, it could be a very bad sign because, unfortunately, many times someone committing fraud within your organization never wants to leave because they don't want anybody else looking at the books and uncovering the fraud that's been occurring. So they just don't go on vacation.
And that's why when we do fraud deterrence studies, we recommend that people who are in accounting positions or in other positions where they're in charge of safeguarding assets, that they have a mandatory vacation of at least 2 weeks, and that during that time, someone else actually performs their job. In other words, you don't just put it aside and wait till they come back. Have somebody else perform the job. So if there is something being covered up, it may be discovered during that process.
You know, they say, Tom, that the best defense is a good offense, and just often having a fraud deterrent study, internal controls evaluation, letting your employees know that someone else is coming along, looking over their shoulder, is a very big deterrent. And unfortunately, the people that are in the position to commit fraud are the ones that you least suspect. They're your trusted individuals who have access.
I'd like to have a dollar for every time somebody's told me that they're not concerned about fraud because they have a very trusted employee handling their accounting.
Just because you trust someone to take care of your finances doesn't mean that that should alleviate the need to have internal controls.
Well, in fact, trusting someone gives them the opportunity to commit fraud. It doesn't mean that they will, but the more you trust someone, oftentimes the more opportunities they're going to have to do something.
And this can go on for years without your even knowing it. And it often starts out small, but then when it doesn't get noticed, that gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, I've never seen one instance where that thief has invested the stolen funds in blue chip stocks. So it's very difficult to retrieve the stolen money.
Right. I think we just recently had a public example of that with the employee at the city of Cincinnati who stole money from her
union
funds. And I think she was investing those with male dancers, amongst other people. So I doubt if they'll recover very much of that.
Some of the other reasons that, or other ways that employees can steal without you really realizing it's because they're able to do it in many different ways. So this is most common, really, even in smaller companies, because there are limited people, fewer people, and so one person is doing many different tasks. There's not a very good diversification of work responsibilities. Anything from padding timesheets to taking a little bit of inventory here or there, travel and entertainment reimbursement abuse. Those are just some examples, fictitious suppliers.
Well, there's lots of ways to commit fraud and to cover up fraud. And in many cases, companies have had controls that were good controls, but then they either changed positions, they may have reduced their workforce, you know, through the most recent recession, they may have a new computer system, a new accounting system, and the controls worked fine in the old system. Maybe they haven't been updated for the new system or the new number of personnel. So there's you always have to look at your controls and make sure they're still the right controls for the way your operations work today.
As you go through and do your internal control processes, look for opportunities to cut costs, to maybe do things in a different way to help you grow a more successful company. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Today, Tom, we're talking about the Supreme Court's decision relative to the health care reform that was under question, and now we have some level of determination in terms of what's happening with that.
Well, we do, assuming it doesn't change again, but at least we know that the law that was passed has been held to be constitutional, and all those provisions are going to come into play, or most of those provisions are going to come into play. And the important thing is what to do about that and how to plan for it. And one of the biggest provisions is if you have more than 50 employees, you're going to have to pay a penalty if you're not providing those employees with health insurance.
Well, it's not an expensive penalty. It's a $2,000 per employee penalty. So it's really important to take a look at that and see what the cost of your health insurance is going to be if you're in that category, or what the penalty cost will be. Another provision is that starting in 2014, all individuals must buy health insurance or face a penalty. Now, the Supreme Court called that penalty really a tax.
Well, regardless of whether it's a tax or a penalty, you can call it what you want, but if you have to pay it, it's not going to feel that good. But the penalty is not really, you know, that onerous compared to what insurance costs.
Yes, it's 1% of your income or $285, whichever is greater. Then in 2015 and beyond, it keeps going up, so that ultimately the penalty by 2016 could be as much as $2,085 a family, or 2.5% of your income, whichever is greater. But there were other pieces of the health care reform package that impacted things besides insurance, namely taxes. People's taxes, in many cases, are going up.
Right. Besides the penalty that's called a penalty but was said to be a tax, there's the tax, which is the Medicare tax, for people who have high income. So if you have more than $200,000 of income, or $250,000 if you're married, you're going to pay tax, a Medicare tax, on your investment income.
Tax rate, Tom, is 3.8% of unearned income, things like dividends, interest, capital gains, rents, royalties. So that's a pretty hefty additional sum on top of the current tax rate that you're paying. You also have a 0.9%, almost an additional 1% of Medicare surtax on wages that are in excess of $200,000 or $250,000 if you're married. So people are in for an increase in taxes here next year unless the legislation changes.
Well, and not only do those new taxes as a result of the health care reform kick in 2013, but assuming there are no law changes, the normal tax rates on income and capital gains are scheduled to go up. So capital gains will be substantially more expensive in 2013 than they are today.
Another change is related to flexible spending accounts, cafeteria plans. Starting next year, the tax deductible amount that a worker can contribute to the plan is going to be limited to $2,500. That's a big change, so that's certainly something that you need to be aware of. Also, if you unfortunately have a lot of medical deductions. You can start deducting medical expenses once they total an excess of 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. That total goes, or that limitation goes up, so that starting next year, you're only going to be allowed to deduct those expenses in excess of 10% of your AGI. So certainly, if you've got medical expenses that you can push into this year, into 2012, it may make sense to do it if you can take advantage of the deduction.
So the healthcare reform may be good if you're uninsured, and as a result of the healthcare reform, you're going to get insurance through your employer. That's a great thing. But if you're a higher income person or an employer of more than 50 people who doesn't have health insurance, it's going to cost you more money.
Also, if you're an owner of a pass-through entity, like an LLC member or a sole proprietor, your business income is going to be added on, is added into your personal income. It's going to throw you into that higher tax bracket and cause some of these bigger taxes to kick in. So the key about this is not to bring you all the bad news, but you need to really start to plan. Figure out what your tax is going to be. What kind of actions should you be taking right now to minimize your tax? For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Mary Horbut. Mary is the Community Outreach Coordinator for Lifespan Credit Counseling Services. Given the fact that Tom and I recently came back from our vacation, what advice do you have for people who may have went just a little overboard in spending on vacation?
Many of us go overboard with spending on vacation. Start looking at easy strategies first. August has 5 Fridays. If you're someone who gets paid every 2 weeks or once a week, then you probably have an extra paycheck in August. Let's apply that to the credit card. Consider taking some sort of staycation, a week or a month. Usually this is so you can stay home and do that instead of a vacation. But in this case, let's take one and let's not do anything for a week. Let's not go out to dinner. Let's skip Starbucks, which is why I said a week or a month, because for some of us, only a week is enough time. And if you promise you're going to do nothing for a whole month, that would make you unhappy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you could do 1 week a month until that credit card bill is paid off. And you can transfer those balances to lower interest rate credit cards, but I hope that would be a credit card that you already have in your possession. Opening another line of credit so you can pay off this year's vacation is probably not a really good financial strategy.
Even having credit to pay for vacation isn't really the best use of credit, is it?
No, it's not the best use of borrowing your money. In an ideal situation, Tom, you have a vacation fund and you use your credit cards to pay for things because it's a much better way to go than using your debit card, honestly. And you have a lot of protections there. But then when you come home, there should be the money already set aside to pay that bill that beat you home.
Using credit cards or debt, really, to pay for vacation, to finance it, to pay for it for convenience is one thing, but to finance it is probably not a prudent financial decision.
Financing it is not a prudent financial decision. The idea is you use your credit cards, but you already have the money to pay for things because it's a safer way to travel. You don't want to carry that much cash with you.
You had mentioned it's probably not a good idea to take advantage of one of those no or low rate interest credit cards that you just open up to pay off the credit card that you've just spent a lot of money on. Maybe you can explain why that's not a good idea.
Because then you're doing what Tom said. You're making a plan to borrow money to pay for your vacation.
So in other words, you're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul.
You're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. You feel like you've erased your debt because you're not paying 15%, but you haven't. You still owe that money. And it can absolutely impact your credit score, opening all these lines of credit when you don't really need them.
Well, I think what a lot of people do is when they do see these low credit card offerings, they'll take advantage of it. And then, or even when they go to a merchandise like a retail store and open up a credit card, then they never plan to use it again. They've done it just to get the discount.
Not a good idea. Having too many open lines of credit out there is not a good idea.
Yeah, we recently went through a refinancing, like a lot of people, to get a lower mortgage interest rate. Mm-hmm. And a negative item on my credit report was that there'd been too many inquiries, because I've looked at refinancing and, you know, every time you do that.
Oh, good. I thought you were going to blame me for that.
Okay, here's I have advice for people that do that, because we too just refinanced. Before you let anybody pull your credit report, you decide who you're going to use for the refinance. You can ask, what will the interest rate be given that my credit score is 810, which I'm assuming yours is. Given the fact that my credit score is 810, what will your interest rate be? What will the closing cost be? You find what's the best for you, and then you let that bank, savings loan, whatever, you let them pull your credit report. You don't let four or five people pull it.
Mary, if people want information about your organization, what's the website?
www.lifespanohio.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Mary Hurlburt. Mary is the Community Outreach Coordinator for Lifespan Credit Counseling Services. And what I want to talk about today is credit scores. That seems like it's increasingly important for everything from getting loans to refinancing your home, sometimes even to getting a job, or it can even affect your insurance rates. What are some of the things people need to think about keeping a clean credit report?
First thing people need to do is pull their credit report. There are three credit bureaus, Equifax, TransUnion, Experian. Each one of those has to provide you with one free report every year. So every 4 months, pull a different one. And you do that by going to annualcreditreport.com, not freecreditreport.com. Just remember, if the first question is, what is your credit card number, you are at the wrong website.
What problems are you seeing? What concerns should people be knowledgeable about that maybe they just aren't thinking of?
One of the things that people aren't thinking about, I always pay my bills, so everything is fine. But the fact is, it's not fine, because you have no idea if somebody is using your identity. And one of the things that I tell people now, people are stealing our identity for more than just money. You may think, well, it's not that big a deal, so somebody opens a credit card in my name or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, people are committing felonies in other people's names. And if your physical description matches the description of the person who committed a felony and gave them your information, you're going to spend some time in jail before you can prove it's not you.
Now, that is a scary thing, isn't it?
It's an extremely scary thing. And I met a woman that happened to, and she couldn't prove it wasn't her until they actually had a picture sent. And they said, well, gee whiz, it's not your face.
Well, how do you protect yourself from that?
One way is to pull your credit report and make sure that everything on there is accurate, including all the personal information. Because if someone stole your identity, chances are they just listed a different address. If that's not your address, get it off of there. The other thing is, pull these credit reports and hold on to them. File them with your will so that if something appears next year that wasn't there this year but claims it's been there for 5 years, and yes, that kind of thing does happen, then you have proof that it was not. A paper trail is really essential today.
Well, and the other important thing I think about getting your credit report is, there may be, you may think you're paying all your bills, but maybe one went to the wrong address. You didn't pay it. They didn't follow up. They just sent it to collections and reported to the credit bureau.
There is no reason for people not to be checking that credit report. Remember, if you want your credit score, you will have to pay for that. So maybe the score isn't essential unless you are planning to refi and you want to make sure you're at that 750 level or something. But the credit report is absolutely essential.
It seems like recently, when someone wants to check information out about you, they always want the last four digits of your Social Security. And, you know, I'm thinking a lot of people could have those last four digits.
A lot of people have those last four digits, and that's why I say you need to hold on to a clean report that has your entire social on it, because since they're only using the last four digits, there's been a lot of confusion where somebody pulls the credit report and they pull using only the last four digits, and you wind up with Susie Smith stuff on your credit report. Mm-hmm. So it's essential that you know what's on there using all nine digits.
If people would like to learn more, Mary, what's your website?
www.lifespanohio.org.
Thanks for this great information.
Thank you.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jim Salters. Jim is the co-owner and the CEO of a Blue Ash company called The Business Backer. And Jim, The Business Backer has grown exorbitantly over the last several years. Let's talk about that, especially given the state of the economy, how your business has been able to grow so rapidly.
Sure, yeah. Since the beginning of 2009, we've grown about 15 times. But, you know, we feel obligated to help as many small business owners as we can. So the growth really has been an opportunity for us to help as many small businesses as we can.
And how do you do that? How do you help small businesses?
We fill an enormous gap out there in traditional lending. Most banks, they're looking to offer a loan against collateral, against, you know, many, many years of profitability. And there's a place for that. And absolutely some of our clients can access that kind of capital. And so many cannot. We take a completely different approach to how we underwrite. We don't look at just data. We look at the whole story. And there really is a story for every small business. And what we do is we take a completely different approach compared to traditional lenders of how we evaluate small businesses. And the net result is we're able to offer between $5,000 and $100,000 in working capital to thousands of small businesses that really have no other option. One of the great advancements in financial services over the last 50 years has been the opportunity to leverage data and computing power. One of the trends that has had many positives but has had some negatives is the drive by all kinds of lending companies to use data as the primary way in which they evaluate potential borrowers. So credit scores, business types, you know, financial metrics, crunched through a algorithm of some kind has become the predominant way in which lenders make decisions. That kind of approach to underwriting has made credit very inexpensive, very fast and efficient to deliver for those that fit in the model. A credit blemish, a business type that has, you know, some negativity associated with it. So many small business owners in particular are left out in that approach. And so, yeah, absolutely. We bring kind of a retro kind of concept back to the table. Yeah, we have data and we use data extensively as a part of what we do. But at least 50% of our approach to our borrowers is understanding the story, understanding the reasons for some potential past problems. But more importantly, looking into the future of that business's potential and including that in our decision making. That's unlike any traditional lender that we've seen.
How do you get around the whole discussion about the interest rate being too high, for example? I know that's a relative term, isn't it, too high? Because if you can't get a loan at all, how much are you willing to pay? How do you explain that away?
Our financing is completely unsecured. So almost any low, you know, quote, low rate bank loan or that kind of financing, even equipment loan, there's collateral. And sometimes that's business assets that are pledged against the loan or a personal guarantee, meaning personal assets could be at risk if for some reason that financing can't be paid back or can't be paid back on time. Our financing is completely unsecured, meaning the business goes out of business. There's no personal assets that have been pledged or at risk. There's no other business assets that are at risk. That helps us work alongside and in partnership with traditional lenders, which we can talk about a little bit, and as well as it just is a completely different product. So we always use the example right now. Credit cards have the ability to take unsecured cash advances from a credit line. Banks charge almost exactly what we charge for that unsecured cash. In the high 20s, that's exactly what we charge. So we're charging the same as a bank would charge for what we do. So yes, the rates are higher.
If people would like information, your website is
www.businessbacker.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today our guest is Jim Salters. Jim is the co-owner and CEO of the Business Backer, which is a company that loans money to primarily small businesses. Jim, maybe a good way to explain what you do is to give us an example of the type of situation where your company can come in and help a small business get the financing they need to do whatever project it is that they're trying to accomplish.
One of the things we found working with literally thousands of small businesses all across the country, but especially also here in the local area, is that small business owners have a lot on their plate. Running the business, managing personnel, keeping an eye on the competition, just fulfilling for their customers every day. Many are not experts in financing their business and not experts in the options that are available to them. Our sales force takes pride in working with our potential customers or existing customers as consultants. A great example would be Allen's Cafe here locally down in the Columbia, Tusculum area. Allen came to us having been turned down by his existing bank for a renovation loan. In looking at his numbers and his business, we thought we could find him a bank that would say yes to a line of credit. And in fact, our partner First Financial was able to offer him a line of credit. Down the road, in the renovation, turns out, as many renovations do, went over budget, and we were actually able to step in and offer financing that supplemented his line of credit, helped him finish that project. And Alan thanked us profusely for not only helping him find another bank option, traditional option for his business, but then being there for him to step in when an alternative supplementary type of financing was needed.
You're actually able to run a successful business, but yet help people, help business owners, really, and oftentimes change their lives. That's got to be very gratifying for you guys.
We have 50 people up in Blue Ash. Of course, I'm biased, but I think are some of the best people. We have one of the best teams in the area, if not the country. And one of the things that motivates our team more than anything is not just coming in every day, doing something interesting and making a paycheck, but making a difference in the lives of others and in our community. We've been able to do that through just our core business. And so far, our customers have directly saved $20 million by working with us instead of a competitor. We're very proud of that. That's money that's gone back into their pocket for maintaining jobs, creating new jobs, and that's a real impact.
That stuff and that kind of vision and mission comes from the top.
We take a completely alternative approach to how we started and run our company. We take 20% of our profit every year. Not 2%, not 5%, 20% of our profit is given back to the employees every year in profit sharing. It creates a completely different mm-hmm. type of opportunity, right? People who want to go above and beyond, shoot for excellence, and actually be rewarded for it, both individually but also financially. What we do is so different. Many people have never heard of this kind of financing. And it is, for us, one of our biggest challenges is just awareness that this is something that's available to small businesses.
And education, because I think people hear the interest rate and freak out.
So one of the things that we've done locally is help create awareness about short-term working capital. It's a completely different thought process than a 20, 30-year loan on a building. How can you make the biggest impact in the shortest amount of time with an injection of working capital? So with the African American Chamber of Commerce, we created a small business stimulus challenge, and their members were presented with a simple proposition. Tell us how you could make the biggest impact in the shortest amount of time with $15,000, right? I mean, that is what we mean by stimulus.
Mm-hmm. Like,
take some money and make a big difference in a short amount of time. Many other members applied. We chose a winner with $15,000 over the course of the next 2 years. They estimated $400,000 of economic impact from that $15,000 financing.
That's a real shovel-ready project, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And you don't have to be a CPA to determine that's a great return on your investment. Jim, we're out of time, but if folks would like more information about the Business Backers, what's your website?
Businessbacker.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. It's every entrepreneur's dream to create a business that grows and prospers and is profitable and just really creates wealth for themselves and their family. But unless you take steps to protect that wealth, protect the assets that you've created, you could unfortunately lose them if you get into a lawsuit, someone sues you. So the question becomes, how do you grow a business and protect your assets?
Well, and that's also every entrepreneur's nightmare, I think, is losing their business because of some lawsuit or some misstep that happens that causes all the assets to be taken by a creditor.
And, you know, most small business owners don't have the luxury of having in-house lawyers, in-house accountants who can do nothing but watch over them and their business operations every day. But some of the very basic things at the very beginning when you start your company that you should consider in terms of overall asset protection is the type of entity, this type of legal entity that you choose to do business. For example, a sole proprietorship, a partnership, LLC, or corporation.
And it's important to understand and talk to your attorney about the liability implications of each type of entity. Limited liability companies have become very popular, both for business partnerships or what used to be a sole proprietorship is oftentimes now a limited liability company. In many cases, people that own rental property will have their rental property placed into limited liability companies for the liability protection it brings. And certainly you need to talk to your attorney to advise you about that, but also understand the tax implications and the tax reporting implications of that. But just because you've put your assets in a limited liability company doesn't mean you're protected from everything, because you may build up a lot of assets in that limited liability company as well.
And there are also special rules about actually mixing yourself individually into the business operations as opposed to the business entity itself. So you have to be very careful, and like Tom mentioned, speak to attorneys, speak to accountants, albeit outside consultants, who can help you understand what you should and shouldn't do to protect your assets. The worst thing that you could possibly imagine is you spend your entire lifetime building this valuable business only to have someone come along and take it from you. So it's critical that you take the steps necessary to protect your assets. Another very important thing is take a look at your insurance coverage. Make sure you have plenty of insurance in case the unexpected occurs to cover yourself and cover any actions that could be taken against you.
Well, in today's world, technology changes a lot of things in your business. For instance, you may be at risk because you have a lot of personal confidential information of people that could be breached. So make sure you understand your responsibilities with regard to that, the security you have with regard to that, and any liability insurance you may need as a result of that.
You just can't let the day-to-day activities of your operations keep you from taking care of these very important matters. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. You know, Tom, there's a saying that you shouldn't mix business with pleasure, but I'm happy to say that you may be able to mix business travel and still get some personal pleasure out of it.
And get a tax deduction.
And get a tax deduction.
Which can be pleasurable in and of itself.
So the question then is, what rules, what criteria do you need to comply with so that you can turn your vacation into a tax deduction?
Well, generally, your business travel, in order for it to be a business expense, your days spent on business have to be at least 50% of the days.
So in other words, the primary purpose of your trip needs to be business related. But if you tack on a few days of personal fun, that won't necessarily deny the tax deduction for the business portion of it. So if you fly somewhere, for example, to go on a business trip, the airplane costs, the hotel, the one half of the meals, other incidentals like taxis, those are all deductible as business expenses.
Yes, if it's a business trip and you're spending at least half your time on business and you can take your family along, they don't have to spend their time on business. You can't deduct the incremental cost of taking them.
Right. So if you and your wife go on a trip, if you were going to spend $200 for a hotel room and she stays there, you can still deduct the entire $200. Now, that is for those business days. To the extent you have personal days after your business is completed, then those will not be eligible for a deduction.
That's right. And the cost of your spouse's meals and entertainment will not be deductible.
Unless your spouse is an employee of your business. And if you and your spouse both work in your own business, for example, then you should be able to deduct the entire cost.
Yeah, as long as they're both doing business.
This also holds true if you're looking for a job. So if you travel out of town to look for a job, and the primary purpose obviously is business related, and again, you tack on a day or two to sightsee, that shouldn't deny you the tax deductibility of those business costs.
Yeah, now those types of expenses, job hunting expenses, are miscellaneous itemized deductions, so not everyone can take advantage of those. It depends upon what else is in your tax return.
The key is really to track everything, make sure you have good documentation, and be reasonable. Make sure that you're not trying to be overzealous in your deductions. Make sure they do sound reasonable, because if you do get audited, then you'll have to be able to prove and substantiate the business purpose and that the costs that you incurred were reasonable.
And the time that you spent on the business.
There are special rules that relate to cruises and international travel. So make sure if you are looking at one of these types of trips that you talk to someone, you engage with people who are knowledgeable in how to maximize your tax deductions so that you can mix your business and travel and let the IRS pay for part of the tab. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.